We're exploring the world of doomsday preppers, people making preparations for major disasters. Judging by the popularity of dystopian books and movies like The Hunger Games, Americans seem to love a good post-apocalypse story.
But the potential for a doomsday disaster isn't just fiction to people in preppers groups. In today's Wisconsin Life, Seth Jovog takes us inside the Madison preppers.
Nuclear war, global pandemics, floods, fires, famine. If the world came crashing down, would you be ready?
I think we live in a society of denial. Government's going to be there because I voted for them, and they're going to come and help me, and they're going to save the day. They're superheroes.
That's Kurt LaHaze. He's a former cop and firefighter who leads a group called the Madison Preppers.
Group started in March of 2012. As of today, looking at it, I think there's 209 members. We cover everything from planning for disasters or emergencies up into canning, beekeeping, gardening, security, self-defense, water purification. I tell everybody, you're your own first responder. You're your own security or police. You're your own fire and EMS. You're your own grocery store. You got to know all those things.
Kurt was raised in Southern California by his grandparents, a do-it-yourself couple that grew their own vegetables and stored them in root cellars, who fixed stuff when it broke. Kurt wanted to be that way. As an adult, he lived through earthquakes and wildfires. He once had to evacuate his home, an experience that changed him.
The first time it happened, I was like, what do I grab? Where am I going? Hotel? Is my house going to be here? All my stuff going to be gone?
In his basement in the town of Bristol, Kurt shows me his prepper's stash.
There's more food.
Shelves stocked with supplies like rope, gloves, and generators, even canisters of potassium iodine to counteract radioactive contamination.
Yeah, I've got, that's canned dog food, pink salmon, chicken, tomato paste, freeze-dried foods, dehydrated foods, staples, emergency food ration bars, canned goods. I mean, I've got Sterno for cooking on soups, stews, beans.
Gotta have
chili.
Water.
So water filters, several of them.
Grills outside.
Spam. Yeah, canned butter. Actually tried it. Nice, good stuff.
I asked Kurt if he was paranoid.
New. I have friends that say that know what I do, and I talked to them about it, and they said, oh, you're paranoid. I said, no, I'm prepared. Or paranoid. People are, you're wasting money. I'm like, do you have car insurance? Yeah. I said, have you ever used it? No, fortunately. Do you waste money doing that? You've never used it. Do you need it? Do I think that the world's going to end tomorrow? No. Hope it doesn't. But could it? Yeah, maybe it could. I don't know. Yeah.
Prepping, Kurt says, isn't crazy. Instead, it harkens back to the age-old American ideals of self-reliance.
I don't think it's anything new. I think it's just reborn, I guess. Being self-sufficient, self-reliant, being prepared.
Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janning. This episode was produced in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. You can find more information at wisconsinlife.org.
Now freelance journalist Seth Jovog joins us here in the studio to tell us more about the Madison Preppers. Seth, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, good to be here.
So Kurt is not the only one in this group. You said, I think over 200, he mentioned in that piece. This is one of the biggest ones in the state, as I understand it, which doesn't match the Madison stereotype, I guess.
Yeah, I was just looking again today. It's actually 244 right now on the meetup group for Madison Preppers. The ones in Milwaukee and the Fox Valley don't have as many members, and they're not as active. They don't have as many meetings. The group in Madison, they meet in the town of Bristol, which is outside of Sun Prairie. So it's not in Madison, but the majority of members come from Dane County or just outside. So it's not just a standalone Madison group, but there was a fair amount of interest, locally here for this group.
Was there a fair amount of self-consciousness that an outsider maybe like you would think of them as paranoid or strange in some way?
Yeah, I went into it. I was expecting that they'd be a little wary of me. And before I went to the first meeting, I actually talked to Kurt, who's kind of the engine behind the group and who is the leader of it. And I wanted to make clear that I wanted to, you know, observe and everything like that. And he was okay with that, and we had a good conversation. Then he introduced me to kind of ease some of those concerns people might had. That being said, you know, people also were a little hesitant to give their names because there is a stigma attached to preppers as being, you know, sort of a lunatic fringe or something like that. And I think maybe they are wary of being dragged through the mud publicly or something like that. But so, yeah, there's a little wariness. But everyone that I spoke to was very open with me about why they're interested. And
yeah. Let's follow up. We heard Kurt's motivation. What were some of the other motivations you heard from the people there?
I guess that was part of the interest for me, is that it was pretty wide range. You know, some people, everybody brought different interests and skills, I guess, to the table. Some people, you know, what are you prepping for is a big question. You know, like some people are prepping for something mundane, like, well, outside today it's 15 degrees below zero. What happens if the power goes out in your city or your region? How would I be prepared for that? Which is a good question. And other people were, you know, preparing for longer range things. It really runs the gamut. You know, be it pandemics or natural disasters or climate change or, you know, economic collapse. So I guess their motivations were sort of across the board.
So not everyone has this apocalyptic vision of a bad thing that could happen, but it could be a tornado or a flood.
Right, right. And I think, you know, TV shows like Doomsday Preppers have popularized preppers or as a whole. But, of course, those shows show the extremes of people who are prepping for zombies and the collapse of the world and things like that. And the reality is probably a little bit more mundane.
Some of the things that people are talking about, gardening, beekeeping, it seems like a lot of people could just extend their hobbies a little bit and be preppers at the same time without a lot of extra investment.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. And actually, while I was working on the story and talking to friends and neighbors about what I was working on, I was surprised by how many people mentioned that they've thought about this topic or they do a little bit of what might be considered prepping, you know, because it does cover, like you said, a lot of different hobbies that are basically, you know, getting ready for, you know, just being prepared for whatever may come. Yeah.
And one of those things they prepare for may be violence. You mentioned self-defense. How big, and I think when people think of preppers, sometimes it's like canned food and shotguns. How big a part of their conversations center on self-defense?
Well, the meetings I went to didn't have that as a focus. However, there were other meetings that focused on, you know, use of firearms for self-defense, use of firearms or air rifles for hunting. I think that firearms can be a big part of it for some preppers. I think for some preppers, it's probably not a part of it at all. But there is definitely an element in prepping. If you go online and just start reading, you'll hear that there's the idea that, hey, people who haven't prepped, if things do go very wrong in our world, those who haven't prepped are going to come after those who have prepped, and they're going to want to take their stuff. So you might need to protect your stuff, and that might involve firearms, which is, that's when it gets pretty ugly, I guess.
And the group you saw at the meetings, more men, more women, solid mix?
There was a mix. There were some married couples there. There was, it was pretty... I think I counted, I'm trying to remember what the count was, but it was almost 50-50 men and women. Yeah, and it was, the age ranges, mostly middle-aged, but there was some younger and some older.
What kind of skills are at the top of people's lists to be ready for whatever might happen?
Well, you mentioned, or in the piece you mentioned some, like canning and things like that. I think really it's almost like advanced camping skills. You know, do you have water? Do you have food? Do you know how much food you would need if for 3 days or 3 weeks or whatever it may be beyond that? So I think there's sort of that, yeah, advanced camping skills is a big thing people want. There was also people who came who had, you know, decades of experience with herbal remedies and gathering their own food from the wild. So it really runs a gamut.
I know community disaster groups in places like San Francisco often focus on building teams, knowing your neighbors, cooperating in the event of, say, an earthquake. checking in on your neighbors who need help, checking in on senior citizens. Any talk about that?
You know, there wasn't in the meetings that I went to, and that was sort of a question I had to Kurt was, you know, I kind of have this idea that, you know, my neighbors and friends would come to each other's aid and we'd figure things out together. And he said, you know, his answer to that was, well, maybe, you know, but you don't know if things really went bad, how would it go? And that might be, I don't know, I don't want to speak for preppers, but that might be a criticism of some preppers. It's like, well, are you retreating and pulling away and just looking out for yourself? Or are you looking for ways that you could help others? Some preppers would say that by being prepared, they're going to be in a position to help others if things went really bad. So that's another way to look at it.
Have you evaluated, Seth, your own preparation level should something bad happen since meeting with the Madison preppers?
Yeah, sure. I thought about it, and I went online and I did a test, and I did really poorly. I went to the Doomsday Preppers website, and I took a test to see how prepared I was in case things went badly. And I would last about a week or two, and then I would die. But the other people, you know, the really good preppers would go 17 or 18 months if just everything went horribly, I guess. You know, I'm not a prepper. I was just thinking about that this morning when it was bitterly cold and looking around. I was like, okay, I have some candles and I have a camp stove. But, you know, I don't have much else in the way of preparations. And maybe I should do a little bit better, especially on days like today. But it hasn't drastically changed, you know, what I want to do.
So you haven't gone out and stocked up on canned food or anything?
No, nope, I don't have the freeze-dried meals or anything like that right now.
So. All right. Anything else that that struck you about prepping culture here in Wisconsin that that people might not expect?
I guess it was, like I said, it was a little bit more mundane than I thought at times. People were just like, hey, let's figure out these skills together that a lot of people have questions about, you know, gardening and beekeeping and canning and things like that. I guess I went into it expecting a little bit more of the lunatic fringe that you see on TV, and I came away with a little less of that.
Seth, thanks a lot for joining us again.
You bet.
That's Seth Jovog, freelance journalist in Madison.